Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the TT Podcast. We're back. Spring has sprung, or at least it's trying to spring. There's bike racing in Italy, and two of cycling's serial winners have been up to their classic antics. Joining me to talk Strada and San Remo is my co-host Tom. Tom, how are you?
You know what, when you said two of cycling's, we got to that part and I thought you were actually introducing us there, and then you quickly moved on. I was like, no, it's not us. It's two of cycling's serial winners.
Two of cycling's biggest wafflers are back on the airwaves.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm good. We are back. I mean, obviously we're quite limited by the cycling calendar and it has just begun for this year, so that explains most of our absence.
Yeah, look, there was racing on before. We've spoken about this. It's hard to get too excited about some of the races that were on before, but Strade Bianche we can get excited about.
I think the European season is really where we come back into the fold.
Yeah, but I mean, even Gent-Wevelgem, we were like,
I can't speak to you, but for me.
Tom, last time we spoke on here was about 2 months ago.
We have seen each other in person since then, haven't we?
We have. When was it we saw each other in person?
Sometime after Christmas, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everybody would have felt it because the cosmos would have shaken slightly. Mm-hmm. But that's what that was. I was doing Dry January because I had I was paid massively overpriced for a Heineken 00.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely January because it was the day I got my passport back from the Italian consulate, and that was towards the end of January, I think.
Excellent. When are you next across to Italy? It's not in time for San Remo?
Sadly, no. I just came back last week. And if I'm lucky, I'll get back around Easter. It depends. There's a few things in motion right now in terms of me hopefully getting to Italy permanently. But in the meantime, while I'm still mucking around on tourist visas, I'm trying not to spend any unnecessary days in Italy out of the like 90 days that I am allowed at one time sort of thing.
Okay. Well, we'll start talking about bike racing in Italy. So you'll feel like you're kind of there. I guess that's a sort of hack in a way. Tom, since the last time we've spoken here, I've diced with death.
This is true. I don't know. The listener might not know about this unless they're a keen reader of your work in the day job.
Yeah, I am now part cyborg. I have a titanium plate in my cheek because I crashed my bike. It sounds really cool. It wasn't. It was a really dumb fall. Basically, my brother for years has been taking the piss out of me because I've never bothered to learn how to corner on a bike. He claims that he's very good at cornering on a bike, which he is, because he used to play a lot of first-person car games on the Xbox when he was younger. So he was like, I know all about taking lines through corners, everything. Kind of checks out.
Well, you can recognize a racing line and still not know how to go around a corner on a bike in London.
Yeah, well, sadly, years of Guitar Hero and FIFA have not given me the same intel. I basically massively messed up this corner. Didn't help that it coincided with the night of a storm, which I'm pinning it on. I'm pinning it on the wind and the slippery floor. Anyway, oh, yeah. Front wheel gave way, jackknifed my bike into the floor. Completely sober, by the way. I'd been to the cinema. Slammed my cheek on the ground, broke my wrist, broke my eye socket in three places.
Yeah, so I mean, my version of this story is that I was walking through Milan and I had absolutely no idea until you sent me a very long audio, and normally that from you means you want a piece of Italian translated. so that's what I was expecting. And then I opened it. I was walking with Gaia and I listened to it and I was just like, oh my God. And then you've sent me the pictures of your face subsequently. And I can confirm for everyone listening, it's bad.
Yeah, the pictures were good. Basically, I had to have corrective surgery on my face 2 days after the crash. But it wasn't anything that was going to hinder my ability to live. It was mostly mm-hmm. aesthetic. So I kind of had plastic surgery, right? Because they were like, my cheek was basically flat on the left side.
Yeah,
because it hit I mean, the floor and then it never bounced back.
You made it sound very serious in the audio. And then obviously I carried on the conversation with you, like, are you okay? And you're like, yeah, I'm absolutely fine, going for surgery tomorrow.
Yeah, I was bouncing around, man. I was good. I also didn't want to be like in the surgery for too long or in the NHS for too long. So if I felt fine, I was like, look, I feel good. Let me go.
Nah, it's just your head, just your eyes. You don't need it.
That's what I thought. I was like, it's just my face.
Yeah.
But yeah, thing is with helmets, really, really good. Don't cover your cheek.
No, but I mean, you said the helmet did get pretty bashed up as well, though, didn't it?
Yeah, the helmet took a few hits. It's got a
So
few dents in it.
the reason your cheek is the bit that got the damage was because the helmet was surely protecting the rest.
You're probably right. I'm trying not to think about it too much because when you start thinking about your own mortality a lot, it can put you off going out on a bike. But what I'm telling you now is when I've been on my bike since, because I had my cast off my wrist a few weeks ago, I am taking corners in the most god-awful way possible. Like I'm going super slow and I'm doing it like going around a hexagon sort of thing. There is no fluidity in the motion.
There's maybe something to be said for that, but I mean, I can convert. I'm looking. I can see you now, and if I hadn't known that this story had happened, I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah, you know what? I was quite disappointed. Not disappointed in a way. I'm sure long term I'm not going to be disappointed. When I had the surgery, for anyone who wants to know, this is quite ghastly information, so take out your headphones now if you don't want to hear. Okay, everyone here is a massive sicko, so I'm very glad you've listened. They went in through my mouth, so they cut. They
Oh,
made an
I didn't know
incision.
that
They made
detail.
an incision in the gum line, kind of here. So
Oh.
basically, from my What's this one? My left nostril, basically round to the corner of my mouth, roof of my mouth, like in the gum line, went in through there, up into the cheek, which means, Tom, as I'm sure you've deduced, I do not have any visible scars.
No, I can see nothing.
So when I tell people, oh, you know, I diced with death, jackknifed my bike, they're like, you're lying. I can see from your face you haven't had facial surgery.
But should anyone get a close look at the inside of your gums, there might be something there.
Yeah, should you put your head inside my mouth, then you'll start to see the extent of the damage.
So the dentist is in for a shock next time you
Oh, they are.
go.
And also by the state of my teeth, but also mostly because of
Let's
that. Tom, let's talk Strada Bianchi.
it.
I know you didn't watch Strada Bianchi, but please lie to me now and say that you did.
Well, so I actually sent you the message on Saturday, didn't I? I was going to tune in, and by the time I was ready and settled to tune in for the last couple of hours, he was away. He was gone. The race was over. Also, with the women's race, I know I did privately tell you that I like Demi Vollering to win, but pretty much what everyone predicted to happen there also happened. So I don't feel like I missed out on too much by not necessarily watching.
Yeah, it was a pretty easy day for those who like short odds on bike racing, wasn't it? Should we get the monument chat out the way to begin with? Very, very boring. Like it feels more boring than ever this year.
It is discourse that I am tired of.
You put it, I mean, Tadej put it better himself. Tadej said, you know, monument status is based on longevity in the calendar, and this race is so young. I mean, it's less than 20 years old, I think. You made a very good point, Tom.
2007, I think this race started.
Is that true?
I think I'm 98% sure on that one.
I mean, look, it can't be a monument if the race started when we were in secondary school, Tom.
What was it? I said to you that if it hasn't had to take a break due to a war, then it cannot be considered old enough to be a monument.
It's true. I mean, that's a rule. And also, I don't think it can be considered a monument if Tadej Pogacar can rock up and treat it like a training ride and still win.
Well, I do think they increased the distance to try and turn it into a monument because that's also one of the criteria that gets talked about, isn't it?
Yeah. And you could
And
tell
I
at the
also think
end.
that played right into Tadej Pogacar's hands.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they
Yeah.
increased the distance by what, 40 km or something, and all he did was increase the distance with which he attacked by 30 km or so. He just proportionally launched because so he won it in 2022 with a 50 km solo attack. This year comes back 81 km. See you later.
Same amount of riding, really, for him. Then he just gets bored and says, "Well, I'm going to go on my own now."
Yeah, I mean, who knows why he did that? I guess he told Philippe Gilbert at the start that he was going to go on the Mont-Saint-Marie. But he said it in a kind of like childish, jokingly way. He was probably just testing the legs and realized, oh my God, I'm on a very good day here. Either that or he'd only put 6 hours in his parking.
Well, you say, why did he do it? He won by what, 3:44, something like that. I can't remember to the exact second what the time gap was, but he did it because it was an incredibly effective tactic.
I had it. It was 2:44. I think the previous
2:44.
Previous largest winning margin at that race was about 40 seconds. So he knocked it out fivefold.
Well, and he absolutely cruised in as well. That last, I have seen the last K, and obviously no need to watch the last K of the men's race, but he was just like taking the high fives and the plaudits and the chapeau hats off, you know, from everyone.
Well, it helped that the chasing group was, or more the peloton really, was treating it like they'd signed up for the sportive.
Well, I was going to say to you, obviously, with a win like that, we have a running thing here where, can you tell me who rounded out the top three? Because I was going to ask you who finished fourth, but it was Pidcock, which I think everyone would be aware of. So I was going to, I'm actually going to ask you who finished fifth.
I can't, oh my God. Honestly, not a clue. Right, let me think.
Yeah.
Tom Scoynes came second because he actually put in a very, very good ride.
Mm-hmm.
Third, he beat a Lotto Destiny rider, Maxime Van Gils.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth was Pidcock.
Yeah.
Genuinely not. I think I'd switch. I honestly think I'd switched off by that point.
I also don't know. I looked at it earlier and I've already forgotten.
What was it? Have you got it up in front of you?
I will do in 20 seconds.
Okay. I will take a guess. Was it Mohorič? It might have been Mohorič.
Well, he was definitely top 10, actually. Now you.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting to be asked who came fifth at Strade Bianche, Tom. We rarely get down that far.
Well, you know how it goes. You have to remember the podium, and then you have to remember where the British riders came. I'm frantically Googling this on my phone because also both as we record this, both of our laptops are broken. So.
Yeah, what happened to your laptop? I'm interested to know this.
Oh, it's been through. When I was in Peru, I set it on fire. I don't know if I've told you that story.
Like as a sacrifice to the gods or?
No, I accidentally opened it over a scented candle that was lit at the time.
It was Mohorič. Mohorič did come fifth.
It was Mohorič. I'll round out the top 10 for you. Benoit Cosnefroid, Davide Formolo, Lenny Martinez, Filippo Zanna, and Christophe Laporte.
Great. Tell me more about this laptop. So you opened it over a scented candle, and how long was it over it before you realized it was in trouble?
So I'm sat at the table. In the center of it was like the dining room table, and in the center of it was a scented candle that was lit, but I couldn't see because it was behind my laptop screen.
And oh, whatever, so you know, the back of it, you tilted back.
There's a bit of glare, so I've tilted the screen back so I can see better directly over this flame. And it wasn't until about 3 minutes later, I guess, so the plastic casing on my laptop is now all melted, and there was a massive black mark on the screen. I did think I was gonna have to buy a new one, but it cooled down and the screen sort of recovered. There's a dark patch, but you can still see it. It's not out of action. So that was the first thing. And I keep like walking into walls while I'm holding it and stuff. It takes a bit of a beating. The camera broke years ago, you know this, because I've had to have some horrible recording setup sometimes when we've done this podcast.
Yeah, you've got like if grandmas did podcasts, that would be your setup.
Yeah.
My laptop, I don't have as good a story for that. My laptop just didn't turn on one day. And I went down to the Genius Bar at Apple. And anyone who's been to the Genius Bar at Apple will have probably the same experience as me, is that you go there and they tell you that it's broken. And they tell you that to fix it, it's going to cost you
more than a new laptop.
Well, no, it's about at least 4/5 of the price of a new laptop. And then they say, Tom, here's a really good idea. Why don't you just get a new laptop? And I say, you guys are just salespeople. You're not geniuses.
If you had Apple Care, would it have been free?
Or... I don't have Apple Care. This is for a different podcast, Tom. A money saving expert podcast. But I think insurance is really dying out with the generations. Do you think Gen Zers are taking out insurance?
I don't know. We can get Martin Lewis on next week to discuss this if we need to.
But... Yeah, Martin Lewis coming on next week to discuss Milan San Remo and laptop insurance.
And Apple Care.
Yeah, right. We've derailed. Let's get back on the rails.
Yeah, okay.
Was it boring what Strade Bianche, what Tadej Pogacar did? I have seen people on social media complaining about people complaining that it was boring. I haven't actually seen many people say it was boring. Is it boring, Tom? You can be the final deciding vote on this.
look, it's obviously not the most entertaining way the race could finish. If you ask me, I want, you know, like a five up sprint. Well, not sprint, but battle over that last K up the Santa Catalina. But I there's a lot to be said for very impressive riding like that. And obviously the results are foregone conclusion, but I don't think that makes it any well that much worse to watch, because sometimes you just really enjoy seeing someone in their prime like that, who's just a class above.
Obviously, from me, Tom, from a journalistic point of view, the sooner a rider wins a race, the better.
Made your race report easier.
Because I mean, my colleague who did the race report on that one was like, I'd finished the first like 5-6 pars before, like before he'd even got into Siena.
I mean, we've both written match reports on football when we were doing other journalism jobs, and there's nothing worse than a last minute goal there, is there? Or a bit of drama that comes late on and ruins the whole, you have to rewrite the whole thing.
Well, this is what the thing is with reporting on cycling races. It's always a last minute. If it's a sprint, that's the equivalent of a last minute goal, right? Because you don't know who's going to win.
If it's a sprint, generally, nothing's happened in the preceding 200K at least.
And then you've got like 5 minutes to scramble something down. I mean, yeah. you can bank on basically the fact that if Jasper Philipsen's in the race, he's probably going to win it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's difficult. With this, this is the equivalent of Man City being up 4-0 at halftime.
Yeah, it's just lovely. You can relax, you can get it in. And then you've got those 80Ks to just flesh out the rest of it and talk about the early race.
Yeah, add a bit of colour in. Write about how good Pogacar is. You've got time to do some Googling about how good he is.
Well, in your profession, you should be aware by now.
Of course I'm aware, Tom. I don't think it was boring, because it's just how Strade is won these days. Pidcock won it with 23 kilometres to go last year. Tadej won it with 50 kilometers to go the year before. The last time it was won with like a attack on the Caterina was when Van der Poel won.
Van der Poel ripping his handlebars off, yeah.
Yeah, was when Van der Poel tore the legs off whoever was behind him, Alaphilippe and Bernal, I think. Some of the best wins in recent years, Tom, have been long-range solos. I've got three here that come to mind for me. Are there any that immediately come to mind for you?
Not in Strade, but when they held the world championships over this road, I'm sure, over these roads, I'm sure I remember there being a long-range solo win there as well. Off the top of my head, I can't remember who.
I'm not going to limit you to Strade. Any long-range solo win that comes to mind for you?
Oh, in any race?
In any race, preferably a cycling race.
Well, the point I was about to make was I think I do like a long-range solo in a Grand Tour, because it quite often has GC ramifications as well, so I can see why people might be less pleased with it in the classics, where it's just one on the day like that.
Now, Tom, does the name Chris Froome mean anything to you?
Are you going back to the Vuelta?
No, does the name Colli della Finestra 2018 Giro mean anything to you?
No, it was the Giro, sorry, not the Vuelta, yes.
80 kilometers. Turned it on his head, took the Maglia Rossa.
And he overturned again. So that had GC ramifications. That there was a need to do that.
Exactly. Other one on a Grand Tour that I thought of was Tom Pidcock on Alp d'Huez. He went over the Galibier with a shedload of time to go.
Yeah, very. Again, though, I think there's a difference. Both of these that you've mentioned so far have been in the high mountains.
Okay. How about world championships? It's kind of common to have a long range solo, right?
Yeah.
Annemiek van Vleuten, 2019 Worlds, Harrogate, 100 kilometers to go.
Yeah, that one I'll allow.
Ah, I've got one through. Right, for those of us who actually wanted to watch a race on Saturday, fortunately they put one on in the morning. Was won by Lotte Kopecky, or as they call her in Belgium, Lotte Kopecky. I throw myself with that now. She beat Italian Elisa Longo Borghini, or as they could. No, I'm not going to do it. on the Santa Caterina, two up duel. That's what we wanted to see.
Exactly.
This Kopecky rider is emerging as a real one to watch, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what we all thought would happen, though, wasn't it?
Quite inevitable.
And again, I have watched that, and I think it was about 600 meters to go on the Santa Catalina. She makes her move. She's away. I think she only, I say only, I think the gap at the line was 4 seconds by the end, but she again, she had a bit of time to sit up and take in the crowd. And then it is a downhill finish over around that last corner, isn't it? That you really come down into the Piazza Campo, the square, anyway.
Piazza del Campo.
Piazza del Campo, yeah. And it didn't really, you all knew what was coming. And when it did happen, at least Longo Borghini obviously just couldn't go with it.
I mean, the exciting thing about that race was we didn't really know how the dynamic would work in ST Works. ST Works Pro Time, we should say. How, you know, last year was one of the best races that we've seen at Strade Bianche when Demi Vollering, Lotte Kopecky sprinted for the line and then appeared to basically swear at each other as they crossed the line. Vollering has now said that that's not what she was doing, which is suitably what you would say. That was an excellent race. And it was
do
like,
do you think there was an agreement in place between them to say we won't do that again this year? Because Vollering obviously finished third and she was only about 25 seconds down the road.
Yeah, well, the agreement seemed to be that Kopecky had free rein to attack, which she did. And Kopecky basically won that race by herself. Like, there were earlier moves on the gravel that she closed down. On the final gravel sector, which is with like 10K to go or something, Kasianovia Doma attacked. I mean, she was relentless all day, but Kopecky chased down Novia Doma herself, then kind of countered a bit and then went with Longo Borghini. And then hung on to Longo Borghini, attacked herself. So, I mean, she won it by herself. And Demi kind of sat back and said, right, fair enough.
She's there to pick up the scraps if it does go wrong for Kopecky.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately for ST Works, Kopecky was, you know, in a finale with Longo Borghini, who had only raced a few times since July last year. She was out last year with a skin infection, COVID, and get this, sepsis.
Oh, that's nasty. Yeah.
That is what, famously one that you do not want to get. So she was not exactly at her peak. I think the only rider who could have given Kopecky a good race in that last kilometer, Tom, was Demi Vollering.
And as we've, well, she's either under orders not to or is being friendly and a good teammate after the events of last year.
Yeah, but all round a really good race. And I think what it showed was that ST Works can be taken to the line this year. Like, if a, you know, 75, 80% Longo Borghini can get to the last 500 meters with Kopecky, then, you know, who knows what an in-form rider can do in those last moments.
There's a chance, but I just think as a double act, I think they're so difficult to stop when you've got Vollering lurking there as well. Just to, I, you know, you can maybe see off one of them, but to see off both of them, I think is very difficult.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, they will come to the fore a bit more. Flanders, Roubaix, Ardennes. Before that, Tom, we have Milano Sanremo.
Lovely.
Shall we discuss that briefly here at the end?
Yeah, let's do it. La Primavera.
La Primavera, la classicissima.
Mm-hmm. The most classic. There's loads of ways you can translate that, but yeah.
It's not the oldest one. Liège is the oldest one, right?
Yeah, because that's la doyenne.
Which means the old lady.
In, well, French, yeah.
Look at us, we're showing off now. I'll tell you what, if you want to talk about boring monuments, this is the one for you.
No, I resent this talk.
Look. We're supposed to be having a nice time talking about Italy. You miss Italy, so I'm not going to start slagging it off. Tom, as the Palio Horse Parade is to Strada, Milan-Sanremo has its own song competition. It has its own competition, which is a song competition.
Song competition, yeah.
Tell me about this year's edition, because you've been sending me memes, and I will be honest, I don't really understand them.
Yeah, so I've probably paid a lot more attention to this than I did to the cycling, sadly. and you know, when I'm watching the song competition, I'm saying, you know, there's also Milan San Remo, a big cycling race finishes here. And then the cycling comes around and I say, oh, do you know about the song competition? So, it was won by a young girl called Angelina Mango, who was not who I wanted to win. But the most entertaining part for me was that there was a Neapolitan rapper who, and the city of Naples basically hijacked the entire competition. Imagine if we had something equivalent and they sent like a Scouser in there and it's just like all of Liverpool. They're not listening to the song. They don't care about that. But the sort of equivalent thing, except there are 3 million people in Naples and they've all bought like 5 SIM cards each to rig the vote.
Was that who you wanted to win?
No, but as a spectacle, it was quite funny because I didn't hate him, but he definitely didn't have the best song. It was a Neapolitan rap, which is not really the kind of thing that normally wins this competition.
What sort of is it usually? You know, is it kind of Eurovision-y, right? It's usually your biggest cheesy pop hit.
So the winner goes on to represent Italy at Eurovision. Yeah.
Right.
A few other good stories. There is a Bjorn Borg's ex-wife is desperate. She just wants to ruin his life, and Sweden are hosting Eurovision this year, so she was desperate to get there.
Okay.
She didn't win, and then she then attempted to qualify for San Marino instead and also didn't win their one. But she's just going out of her way to make Bjorn Borg's life as difficult as possible. So she wants to go and sing in Sweden for if there are any countries listening who still don't have their acts, she's up and available.
Well, I appreciate the tenacity.
Yeah.
Who did you want to win?
A woman called Annalisa. I've sent you the song and I'm sure you've admitted
it's
a
yes.
Very
no, this was a good song.
Yeah.
It was quite repetitive.
Yeah. You can do a fantasy San Remo team if you want. So I had one of them and she was my captain.
And how did she do in the end?
She came second.
Oh, okay. That was a valiant effort.
Yeah. And she was the bookie's favourite to win. So it was a bit of an upset. And I think the journalists sort of had to hijack it away from the Neapolitan guy and just decided they were giving it to this other girl.
Okay.
Because it's, I don't know, it's like a third public vote, a third journalist's vote, and a third something else. I can't remember how the scoring works.
Right. You know what, Tom? When I messaged you before this recording and I said, just as a warning, I'm probably going to throw to you at some point about the Marino Song Competition. You might want to Google something. And you said, don't worry, I've got it covered. I didn't realize you genuinely paid that close attention to it.
It's on for 5 days. It runs Tuesday through Saturday, and I watch the whole thing.
And yet you can't watch 20 minutes of bike racing.
I've watched 20 minutes.
What are we expecting from San Remo this year?
I would imagine exactly the same thing that happens every year.
Yes, I think somebody will go on the descent of the Poggio. And they will probably stick it out to the line in San Remo. A little twist this year is the race doesn't actually start in Milan.
It hasn't for a while, though, has it? It starts, it's still, whatever, 302, 303K. Well, I can't remember what the total distance is, but it's too long.
Yeah.
But it starts in one of those towns just outside Milan, yeah.
It starts, like, considerably south, more south this year, in a place that begins with a P that I can't remember. Maybe Pavia?
Pavia,
is that a place?
That is a place. That's somewhere to the... That way, left, west of Milan.
To the left of the left of Milan.
The left of Milan. If it is Pavia, I'm quite sure. I might have to check the map. It could be somewhere else, but I'm quite sure. I feel like it's sort of in between Milan and Turin.
Okay. Well, this checks out. Also, for anyone worrying that Milan San Remo is this weekend, it is not this weekend. It's on the 16th of March. We're just, for once, very early to talk about something. Do you know what's annoying me? Not annoying me, but kind of irking me a bit about this classic season, Tom, is that we don't have repeat duels with the top riders.
No, they're all sort of cherry picking their races, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean,
although I suppose it's again some sort of gentleman's agreement where they've all sort of, you know, there's the ones that they've won, and if they've won them, it means the other ones haven't, so they're all targeting different races.
It seems to be like that. Like, yeah. Van der Poel did not do Strade Bianche. He's starting his season at San Remo. On the other hand, Wout van Aert has already started his season. He did Gent-Wevelgem. He didn't do Strade Bianche, and he's not doing San Remo, but he is doing Flanders.
Oh, he must be desperate to win Flanders.
Yeah, and Roubaix, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, as a Fleming, that must be the one that he wants more than anything.
Yeah, especially when Van der Poel's on a hat-trick now.
Well, exactly,
Pogacar is doing San Remo. He's not doing Flanders or Amstel Gold. It's an odd season, and it's hard.
But then, I mean, I can see, I don't know if Pogacar's got any GC ambitions later on in the Grand Tours or in any races over the year.
Well, he's doing the Giro, crucially.
Yeah. Is he at Tirreno Adriatico now?
No, I don't think he's riding at the moment. He did Strada.
Yeah, famously won it.
Of course, yes, because we were just talking about that 20 minutes ago. And Lotte Kopecky won the women's race as well, by the way. It's just an odd season this season. I think it's because the Olympics is thrown in. Riders are not sure when to peak because they, like, the, you know, we're obviously not crucially an Olympic sport, but the Olympics is very, very big in our sport. So a lot of them will only get one or two chances to be medal competitive there.
I don't know. I don't, obviously, it messes around with the tour finishing in Nice. Is whenever I see that route, that just gets me every time as well. It's a horrible year for the sprinters.
Yeah, we did speak. Did we speak about this in our predictions episode? I'm sure we did, yeah, because one of us said that a sprinter is not going to win a single race this season or something like that. There will be no sprinters at the Vuelta, you said.
I said no sprinters at the Vuelta, and then what did I say? I also said that what Jumbo, whatever their name are, what are they, Lisa bike? No,
Visma Lisa bike or Jumbo,
Visma.
whatever their name are.
My other prediction was that they won't win a single Grand Tour.
Right. Well, that's currently still, you know, still with the bookies. They haven't, you haven't, you know, that one hasn't been cancelled yet.
Yeah,
You're not bust.
with all Grand Tours not having taken place yet, I'm still in the clear on that one.
Yeah, crucially, because none of them have taken place. Right, San Remo on the 16th. Do you want to give me who's going to win that one, Tom?
Oh, you've sprung that on me. I need to go down the start list and actually see who's there.
Yeah. Well, there's
In the
only
meantime,
really two guys that are going to win it. I think it is between Pogacar and Van der Poel, and it will probably be Van der Poel.
that about every race. Again, if Pogacar is going to win, he's going to have to. It's going to. He might be the one to break the mold and make it a long solo break again. But in a 300K race, that becomes infinitely more difficult.
Yeah. Do you know what I was looking at? Anthony Turgis has a very strong top 10 record at Milan San Remo.
Do you know what? When you asked me, do you know what I was looking at? I would not have guessed it was Anthony Turgis's Milan San Remo record.
Is that what you're looking at now?
No.
Oh, right.
I'm just trying to find a little preview and start list of Milan San Remo so I can
It probably won't be
offer
out
up a
yet.
name that isn't Van der Poel or Pogacar.
Okay.
Anthony Turgis, for example.
Anthony Turgis, I don't think he's on the start list, but if he wins, well, nothing will happen, to be honest, but that would be very good.
I'm sure we've talked about. I mean, I know we've talked about him before because you're right. He does pop up out of nowhere. He seems to like that race.
Yeah, he's like, I was going to say Madouas at Flanders, but I think Madouas has only really had one top. He's like Askren at Flanders. Apart from Askren, actually won Flanders. I can't find a very good comparison, but he's just very good at San Remo.
It does start in Pavia, and it's 288 kilometers according to this.
No, that it they would have nudged it over 300. Surely.
I don't know. Do you
There'll
want,
be a 40-kilometer neutral section.
anyway, Mathieu van der Poel, my pick for San Remo. It just
That's
is.
so
He's always
that
my pick. Yeah.
you made me wait that whole time so you could find someone interesting, and you've come back with Mathieu van der Poel to win San Remo.
Well, luckily you offered up Anthony Turgis and all of your own
Okay.
listeners, so I didn't need to find anyone interesting.
Okay. As I said, Tom, we're early on that one. That is the 16th of March, that race happens. Tom,
Which
if you.
is a week and a bit away from the time of recording here.
Yes. Tom, if people want to get in touch with us, how can they do that?
They can get us on Instagram, although I don't know the last time we've posted anything on Instagram, but we are there. And X, formerly known as Twitter, at TTPDCST.
Yeah, look, the posting has fallen off a cliff, but I know I can speak for myself here. I could probably speak for you, Tom. We've both got the notifications turned on.
Yeah, I mean, that Twitter account we have is my best way of keeping up to date with the races, to be honest, if I'm not watching them. So.
So we're there. We're on there, silently keeping an eye.
Yeah,
But
absolutely.
drop us a notification. We'll get back to you. Tom, a pleasure speaking to you. Hopefully, next time I won't have more ghastly injuries to account for. I hope you enjoy San Remo. Sorry you're not going to be in Italy for it. And I look forward to speaking to you next time.
Yeah, thank you. Hope your face does recover, and we'll be back sooner than the 2 or 3 months that it's been since the last time we did this.
Yes. Thank you very much to you too, the listener. Take care.
Bye, everyone.